County, and I drive the main road, searching in the sun for another overload.
Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. I know you could debate this all day if you wanted to, but in my opinion, and I think in your opinion, this is the best of Glenn Campbell's music, isn't it?
I am covered in goosebumps.
Such a beautiful song.
It was written by Jimmy Webb and performed beautifully by Glenn Campbell.
I have a Pandora channel for Glenn Campbell.
Is that right?
Yeah, I do. And And listen to that song a lot. And then Jimmy Webb's follow-up, I think, was Galveston.
Yeah.
And he said it was one of the few times he actually was charged with writing a follow-up song of a hit that actually became a hit that worked.
It doesn't always happen that way.
But the Wichita Lineman is just a great song.
It's just beautiful.
So we received the sad word yesterday that Glenn Campbell had passed away after bouts with dementia for over a decade, right? It's got to be right around
a decade. I don't
know
how long, Bill. Yeah. He toured, maybe 3 years ago?
Yeah.
Yes.
And played at Ravinia. And there's a film that came out called I'm Still Here.
Yeah.
And if you haven't seen it, it's just a great film about him and about how he dealt with it and the tour. I'm so sorry I didn't see him when he was on that tour, because it was a pretty remarkable movie, and I wish I'd had the chance to see him.
Several years ago at WLS, I was working on Rokan's show, and we had Glenn Campbell on as a guest. And we talked to him. He was on the phone. He was coming to Chicago a week later, and we had him on to promote that. So we talked to him primarily about his music and his variety show that was on. And then I said to him, I asked him a question that I had always wondered, because as a child I saw True Grit, and he's so good in it. And I said, was it intimidating? You hadn't been in any movies before, and then all of a sudden you're not just in a movie, but your scenes are with John Wayne. I said, that must have been kind of intimidating. And he laughed really hard, and he said, you know, it's an interesting story how I got the job. He said, I had never acted in anything. He said, I was a musician. That's all I did. And the movie people were putting together True Grit, and they're sitting down, and they're trying to figure out who's going to play that role. And they're throwing out all these names of Hollywood actors, and John Wayne's just sitting there, and he's listening, and he's listening. And he goes, I like Glenn Campbell. And they all go, oh, well, that's great, Duke, but Glenn Campbell is a musician. He plays the guitar. And he goes, I know who he is, and I like him. And they go, well, that's great. And they keep mentioning names, and John Wayne just goes, get Glenn Campbell. And they go, well, we can't, because he doesn't do movies. He's not an actor. He just plays the guitar, and he sings. He's really good, but he's not right for the movie. And John Wayne goes, I don't want to hear any more of this nonsense. You get Glenn Campbell. And that's it. He walks out. And they got Glenn Campbell, and he was great.
So because John Wayne was a super fan of Glenn Campbell's, he got the role?
That was all it took. And then
he
was so good in it. And I don't think he ever acted in anything else after that. I think that was a one-time thing. But yeah, wasn't he good in it?
He really was.
Yeah. One of the people who tweeted out yesterday, I retweeted, was Steve Martin. And he thanked Glenn Campbell for giving him his first professional writing job. You know, Martin started on writing some of those
Smothers Brothers.
Yeah. And then he tagged, and it's on my Facebook page if you want to see it, but he tagged a video or posted a video of Steve Martin and Glenn Campbell and I think it was three other people, and they played a banjo piece for five banjos on the Glenn Campbell show.
Oh, cool.
Which was maybe for the first time Steve Martin was ever on TV.
Yeah, maybe.
He touched so many lives and so many age groups. We were talking in the office about his variety show that was on.
Yeah.
He just had that all around American good old boy looks. Everybody loved him, young and old. My son Michael's a singer-songwriter, just idolized him.
You almost can't help it. He was one of those guys that it'd be nearly impossible to not like him, right?
Right. And I heard an interview earlier on the Steve Cochran show. Dean will be playing it in its entirety on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And Dean asked him, you know, what do you want to be known as? What's your legacy going to be? And he just said, you know, I want to be known as a guitar player. Mm-hmm. It meant a lot to be a great guitar player. Of course, part of the Wrecking Crew, which was just a bunch of session musicians. And some of the songs Glenn Campbell played on, Hello Mary Lou by Ricky Nelson,
mm-hmm.
Donka Shane by Wayne Newton, mm-hmm. Surf City by Jan and Dean, Elvis Presley, What I Say, I Get Around by the Beach Boys. He was actually a kind of a member of the Beach Boys for a while.
Yeah.
Played with the Righteous Brothers on You've Lost That Love and Feeling, and Strangers in the Night, Frank Sinatra.
Wow.
The Monkees, Mary Mary. He did a lot of, I think, I want to say he played Last Train to Clarksville, too. I'm almost positive
yeah.
he did. Mama Tried by Merle Haggard he played along with, and the Vogues, Turn Around, Look at Me, the original version. He was amazing.
That's a wingspan.
I'm sure there are more that we're not even mentioning.
Right. I don't know who over at Channel 9 posted this. It was not Jeff Hoover. That was my first thought, was this is Jeff's work, but it was not. So they show Glenn Campbell in the studio singing Rhinestone Cowboy, and everybody from the WGN News is behind him just kind of clapping and singing along. And for some reason, Dean Richards is dressed as a bull, and somebody is riding him back and forth while Glenn Campbell's singing. And Robin Baumgarten keeps apologizing, but he just goes on undaunted. He just keeps singing the song. He's enjoying it, and then Dean just keeps riding around like a bull. It's a very strange moment.
I'm sorry I missed that.
As I'm watching it, I'm like, I'm dreaming this, right? I'm not really seeing this, but it's real. I watched it a second time just to prove that it's real. So, yeah, what sad news about Glenn Campbell, who we all had nothing but the highest respect for, and it's just sad.
Alzheimer's is bad, and he was quoted in an interview as saying that, you know, it's not that bad for me because I'm not remembering what I'm supposed to remember, but then I'm not stressed about it. It was his wife and the people around him that suffered more.
Right.
You do that tour with a teleprompter, and and if you watch the film, you'll see sometimes when he just can't quite get in sync and he has to stop. I mean, he was severely, pretty severely affected by Alzheimer's when he was out on this last tour. And the last thing I'll say about the movie that's great is you guys are talking about all his very public accomplishments.
Yeah.
And the movie shows that all those really publicly accomplished people are just men and women, too.
Right.
And you just see his interaction with family, and it's just a great movie.
Give the name one more time, Steve.
I believe it's called I'm Still Here.
That's right.
And it's
a
documentary from just a few years ago.
Yeah.
I think I saw it on Netflix.
I've seen half of it. I turned it on halfway through and then was glued to it, but I got to go back and watch the first half because I never saw it.
I was not ready to commit to it. You had to be in the mood to watch that, and
it's
I can't
to
wait
watch.
To see it, but I will be definitely watching it.
Yeah.
He will be missed, and 81 is not bad.
As that number approaches, I always say, no, that's way too young. You know, there was a time where I went, you lived to 81. You did what you needed to do probably. But now I like to think of a higher number.
Hey,
is it I'll Be Me?
Yeah, I get it wrong. I'm sorry.
Is it I'll Be Me?
I believe that's what Kevin says, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll Be Me. Close enough.
All right.
Three
words.
It's not close at all.
L.
I'm sorry.
Well, people can Google it.
Yeah.
But he really accomplished quite a bit in his lifetime.
A lot.
And with Alzheimer's, 81, it's not bad.
I guess. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's other things to discuss with you. If you'd like to join us at any point during the show, 312-981-7200 gets that done. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
I've been walking these streets so long, singing the same old song. I know every crack in these dirty sidewalks.
Would it be safe to say this is probably the song he is best known for?
Yeah, I guess. You know, I think that it was hokey and I didn't like it, but anytime I hear it, I know every word,
yeah, right.
And it's very enjoyable. It was one of Campbell's signature songs. It has not gone unnoticed that the lyrics, which focus on survival, hustle, and smiling through the pain, closely identify with the singer. And he recorded it in 1974, didn't gain popularity until Campbell recorded and released it in 75 and went certified gold. Gold.
I remember Johnny Carson doing a version of it on the show.
What?
Johnny Carson came out dressed as a cowboy one night and sang the song, I think in its entirety, and brought the house down. Like, people loved it.
Johnny Carson
yeah.
sang it?
See, Kevin, if you can find that on your internet box. He really, like, he used to do, for some reason, because it was like the most popular song in America, so every once in a while, Johnny would just do a line from it. Like a rhinestone cowboy, like that, and people would love it, and then one night he just did the whole song.
That's amazing.
It was a very weird moment.
Well, they have put together at theboot.com the top 10 Glen Campbell songs of all time. True Grit from the True Grit soundtrack. I don't remember
it.
I
think that would be one of his best. Movie role was great.
Sung by Campbell, received nominations for both the Academy Award for Best Song and a Golden Globe. It was one of his several songs featured in the film and television.
Hmm.
Galveston.
Yeah.
It's a great song.
Yeah.
Wichita Lineman, of course.
Which I thought as a child was about a football player because of the lineman. Because in my head, that's all I knew that a lineman was a football player. So for years, I thought that was a great song about a football player.
Jimmy Webb, who wrote it, saw a solitary lineman working on top of a pole, and it evoked such an imagery of loneliness in the songwriter that he mentally put himself in the lineman's shoes. He imagined what he himself would say atop that pole, phone in his hand, and Wichita lineman was birthed from that imagined story.
To my knowledge, the only hit song ever about a telephone line person. I can't think of any other.
Hello, it's me, Todd Rundgren.
Oh, I
telephone
guess.
Line telephone from line, ELO.
Yeah. Oh, look it, there's dozens of them.
Telephone song from the Vaughn Brothers, Jimmy and Stevie Ray.
They were all prompted, though, by Jimmy Webb.
Yes.
Hello by Adele is probably about a lineman.
Probably.
All right, there's a lot of songs now that I think. I'm sorry. You're right.
Not necessarily called a lineman.
Nah.
Try a Little Kindness from 1970. I don't know. This song peaked at number 2, and I don't know if I know it. That was on the country chart. Hit number 1 on the Hot Adult Contemporary chart and Billboard's Top 100. Try a Little Kindness.
I don't think I know that song at all.
By the Time I Get to Phoenix is another one of Glen Campbell's greatest songs.
There was an element of loneliness in much of his music. Do you see that pattern? Somebody's jilted in a lot of his songs.
Yeah. Final single from Rhinestone Cowboy was Country Boy, You Got Your Feet in L.A. Not to be confused with Thank God I'm a Country Boy.
That's John Denver.
Right.
Was Southern Nights his?
Yes.
That's a great song.
Southern Nights was the first single released from the record of the same name, and fans were immediately taken by the infectious country song. Which one is this?
This is Southern Nights. This is so unlike the kind of music I like, but I like this. Steve, would you like to go line dancing with me after the show?
Can we do that?
Yeah.
Is this like 1976?
Yeah. 77, very good.
Because this
number
is a kid
hit.
Song for me, right?
Yeah.
Remember the hot summer nights when I heard that?
Yeah.
Written by Alan Toussaint and inspired by his childhood memories of visiting relatives in the Louisiana backwoods.
Mm-hmm. That's why it speaks to me.
You were born there?
Because I've been
there?
To Popeye's Chicken a couple times. So it reminds me of that.
Gentle on My Mind, that's a beautiful
a good song.
It made BMI's top 100 songs of the century.
Oh.
And Elvis Presley, Frank Sinatra, Johnny Cash, and others have covered that song, totaling at over 300 covers by different artists.
Really? That's impressive.
Yeah.
That's very impressive.
I don't know. This one really hurts me for some reason.
I feel the same way. And, I mean, it. This time it didn't sneak up on us.
Yeah.
It was kind of inevitable. And yet, I heard the news yesterday, and I just went, oh, come on. That's not fair. It's very sad.
And I did read recently that he was not doing well. He was in a place that he lived there and was not able to play his guitar anymore, couldn't remember things. Yeah. It had gotten pretty bad. And I think this was a couple few weeks ago that I read it.
That's so sad.
Very sad.
Awful.
81 years old, Glen Campbell. Thanks for all you did.
Oh, yeah. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then there's more coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Because, baby, now we got bad blood. You know it used to be mad love. So take a look what you've done. Because, baby, now we got bad blood. Hey, now we got problems.
You know what we have now, Wendy, is bad blood and problems.
You made a really deep
I got to tell you, I didn't want to like Taylor Swift.
What won you over? What made you decide?
Her talent.
She's so talented.
I mean, she's adorable, and I'm like, oh, just another dime a dozen chick singer.
Did you think that about
kind of
Taylor Swift? Did you?
Yeah, but then it's like every song I hear, she's really talented.
She's very, very good.
What was her like first hit? It wasn't that one. It was
Papa Don't Preach.
No, that was Madonna.
No.
Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves.
No,
that's
that was
it.
Cher.
Gypsies.
I sang that in a musical production in Chris Bobolek's basement as we put on a neighborhood play.
If someone has a tape, I will pay $500
no
for
one
it.
Taped.
I remember trying to get a ticket to that. I couldn't do it.
No could one taped anything tickets. Back then.
Eric Soderholm couldn't even get a ticket to that.
Why do you have to be so wrong or whatever that one? You're so wrong. Why
and Soderholm
do you have to be...
gets them for everything.
Yeah, but not for that, Steve. Impossible to get the tickets.
You know what
is it called?
Why do you have to be so rude, mean?
Oh, yeah. That
was not an early one,
I don't
one,
think
though.
That was her right. That
okay,
came later.
Well, I love that one.
Yeah, she's good. She's involved in a lawsuit.
I hear these things.
This is the craziest lawsuit. Now, you and I know this because for a living, we do this. This is what we do. So people come in to the studio and then...
And I grab their Botox.
Many times you will do that. And I show you the form. I go, Wendy, do you want to have to fill out this form again?
Oh, I thought you meant the form, like you have to cup your hand just
so. No, not
so.
That form.
Bill's got good form.
No.
Wendy, here's what
no.
you do.
I've been seeing you, Wendy. You're not doing it right. Try this.
All right.
A form to sign. All right.
Many times when celebrities come in, we take a picture, and then the picture is posted on Facebook. And as you know, I'm not as huggy as you are. You're very huggy.
Right.
And I'm more selective. I only hug people that I'm not supposed to hug.
Like all right, who was?
Danny Trejo. I hugged him. You shouldn't, but I did.
Stevie Van Zandt.
You're not supposed to hug Stevie Van Zandt, but I gave him a huge hug.
There was someone. Who else did Bill hug?
Who else, Kevin? Do you
Danny
remember?
Danny Trejo.
It's a strange mix.
Stevie Van Zandt. Steve... Michael Rooker?
No, I didn't hug Michael Rooker this time, but next time I'm going to. I keep a chart.
It is a weird group of hugging.
Who was it, Kevin? He's got a... Kevin has a diary. He'll look it up. All right. So what happened was Taylor Swift shows up on a show in Denver with this guy, David Mueller, who was a DJ in Denver, was until this incident. They bring Taylor Swift in and they do the photo with everybody. And then David Mueller decides to put his hand on her butt.
Under her
yeah.
dress. That's
you
what's
can't saying. Do that. You've gone too far when you do that.
Thanks, Bill.
I even Danny Trejo said to me, hey, enough is enough. I'm your friend, but this has gone too far. So now there's a lawsuit. All right. Now, here's what he said that's really interesting to me. He says he may have, this is his defense, because you can't just, when Taylor Swift comes to you, you can't just grab her.
No, that's, and it has to be somewhat truthful, because why would she bring this out if
right.
she didn't have evidence?
Well, there's pictures. They were taking pictures of all this, you know? All right, so he says, the DJ, the former DJ, David Mueller, says that he may have touched Taylor Swift's ribs. To which I say, guilty. You can't. Who in their right mind would go, well, here's a celebrity, here's me, we're taking a picture, I'll just put my hand on their ribs.
Well, if you're going, because this is some uncomfortable moments have happened with me too, not like this.
What happened?
But when we're posing for pictures, sometimes I put my arm to go around their waist.
Right.
So maybe that's where he touched her rib. Because people, I mean... go look on our Facebook page. Every picture, I kind of put my arm underneath theirs to put it around the back of them.
Yeah.
One time I might have goosed someone.
Maybe.
I wasn't trying to.
All right.
But it's an awkward moment. If he's coming in to take a picture and a lot of people put their arm around
right.
someone, I could see where maybe he inadvertently hit her rib. But that's different than going up her skirt.
Here's what I do. I always let the person, the guest, lead. Like I let
We're
them
not dancing.
Dictate. No, but I do sometimes. I'll dance with a guest when after the interview's over. I'll do a foxtrot with Steve Dale.
You make me feel like dancing, Steve
yeah,
Dale.
Yeah, sometimes I'll dance with a guest.
I get it, a foxtrot since he's an
yeah,
animal.
Yeah, he does animals. He's yeah. a noted pet expert. So I always leave it up to the guest as to how close we'll be or whose hand will go where. I just I'm adaptable. It's like, whatever, all right, you decide. And then I go, oh, all right, that's fine.
Look at any picture on our Facebook page. And Kevin, you take pictures of us all the time. Bill, you just kind of like are a standing outsider.
Yeah.
And always not, well, sometimes smiling.
Usually talking.
Usually
mid-sentence. Even though you know a picture is being taken.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Yes.
Like at some point you'd think I'd realize
it.
Nope. I don't.
One of these days, after several years, you'll figure it out. But you're not you.
It's usually me warning them that you might grope them. It's me saying to the guest, "Hey, watch your valuables, because Wendy's been known to reach around." I'll say that to the guest.
Bill,
I'll just go be very careful.
But if you look at all of our pictures, I have my arm around the person, and Bill's just like that standing third wheel guy.
I could be photoshopped in or out of any photo we've ever taken so easily. It would take a half a second to just have me erased.
I got to thank you for that, because sometimes when I want to cut you out of the picture, it's very easy to do.
Oh, it's so easy. Like in anybody else's team photos, you go, oh, you can't get rid of, because look, his arm or his head. No, not with me.
You're like the innocent bystander who's not
always that
innocent.
Yeah, always. On the opening day of the Taylor Swift groping trial, they need a better title for this trial.
Bad.
The former DJ, David Mueller, who sued Swift 2 years after being fired by his radio station. That's gutsy, by the way.
If he didn't do it. If he claims he didn't do it, and, I mean, can you tell in the picture where his hand is?
It looks to me like...
Can you see his hand? Let's put it that way.
It was a coach's challenge, so I had to look at it. It looks to me like it was premeditated. And again, this is just my opinion, but he seems very comfortable with the placement of his hand.
And is it upper skirt?
It's.
Can you see it?
It looks. Yeah, it kind of. Find it online, because it look like when you, if you just see the picture, you say to yourself, oh, that's a guy who's like, he's, I mean, maybe in the heat of the moment, he wasn't really thinking clearly, but it looks like he's extremely comfortable. And I'm always curious as to what the conversation was during this. Or even after it. Like, did she say to him, hey, that was, you went too far with that? Was there any moments of words being exchanged going, I'm not really comfortable with what just happened there?
It's weird. I mean, Taylor Swift is popular enough where she doesn't need this DJ, trust me.
Oh, sure.
But it's also an awkward moment to go, come on. You know what I mean? It's
right.
Just sometimes it's like, whatever, let's get this over with so I can get out of here.
Right. Wouldn't you, at the time of the alleged groping, wouldn't you make a noise to signify, oh, something's going on that's not right?
What I would say, I'd be like, hey, now, come on.
Right.
That's what I would say, and defuse the situation. And
right.
If I needed to, then slap him.
Yeah.
Or her.
It wouldn't, right.
Opportunity grope.
Slapper.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah. All right, so former DJ David Mueller sued Swift 2 years ago after being fired by his radio station after the encounter. I have to think, if this is a radio station that frequently brings in A-list talent like Taylor Swift, the last thing they want to do is upset her or her management. So I'm guessing this was a quick decision, I would imagine.
All right, this guy's a tool.
You see the picture, right?
I gotta
tell you. Are
you
at the picture?
Just the look on his face, and his arm is really stiff.
Yeah.
So it's not like it accidentally dropped down there.
Looks like a premeditated groping.
He's got this look like, look what I'm doing in this picture.
He looks proud.
Yeah, he's a jerk.
That's what I mean.
Shame on him. He has no lawsuit. He's guilty. Next.
Yeah. Judge Judy has spoken.
No kidding. She hadn't been presented with any evidence 30
right.
seconds ago.
Right.
Because if
Bailiff Rusty is, he said this is a record.
Listen, the eyes are the window to the soul, my friends.
Hold on a second. Where's
if
my
you
pen?
Can,
hold on.
He is looking like he's all puffed up, and he has that look like, you know,
look what I
hey,
just
buddies,
did.
Look what I'm doing.
Huh?
I can't wait to tell my friends and show everybody
right.
this.
That's what I mean.
Yeah,
but
he's
then,
a jerk.
But then he turns around and sues them.
Yeah, good
saying,
luck.
This, you can't trust me like this. I'm just taking a picture. I'm not doing anything wrong.
But now he gets some press and he can get a job.
But would you, I mean, I know there was a time where it was fashionable for radio stations to bring in somebody with a reputation. But I think those days are kind of gone, aren't they?
I don't.
Would somebody hire this guy just because of this?
Well, not because of it, but, you know, maybe his tapes and resumes or downloads and resumes weren't being looked at. And so now it's like it gets his name in the press again.
Right. Oh, he's getting a ton of press.
WTUL. We'll hire him.
The tool.
He is
in Rantoul, Illinois.
He looks. Really, that's the name of their
station?
Listen
to the tool.
I love it.
All right, so David Mueller,
guilty.
Wendy says guilty. The trial's over, apparently. Who sued Swift 2 years after being fired by his radio station after the encounter, testified on Tuesday at the civil trial in Denver that he may have touched Swift's rib cage or ribs or rib.
Okay, then he doesn't know where ribs are located.
Right.
Because his hand is clearly on her
right.
bottom.
Right.
And another thing in this picture, Bill, if I can explain to you, he's got a chance to hug Taylor Swift. He would move in a little closer.
You would think.
He is showing space so you can see that his hand is on her butt.
I swear to you, that was going to be my closing argument, counselor, was to say he is doing that typical, look at me, huh? Look where this
I got
is.
The whole world in my hands.
Yeah. Oh,
maybe not, but Taylor Swift, yeah.
Yep.
I don't know why I'm thinking he's Andrew Dice Clay,
I'm not sure why either, but that's the form that he's exhibiting in this photograph. So if you're Taylor Swift's attorney or attorneys, you go, here's the picture. What else do you need from me?
Yeah, but it puts her in a bad spot now to countersuit. It's like she just wanted this to go away. It's a stupid DJ.
Yeah.
Where's he from? Colorado?
Denver. Yeah.
Big dummy.
Right.
He
thought those were her ribs.
Well, then someone needs to get Recessa Annie and show him on the doll where everything's
anatomy.
Located.
I agree with you. All right, let's take a quick break
what
and then more
jerk.
Show. 312-981-7200 if you would like to weigh in. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. I needed to point out, because I don't know if you know this, Wendy, but our popularity has surged in Dusseldorf. So I just wanted to make it clear to the people listening in Germany that there is, as of now, no Riverside Healthcare in Frankfurt in Germany, but there is here in the southwest suburbs.
Is it because I mentioned David Hasselhoff the other day?
That's a big part of it. Yeah, that's a big part of it.
How's he doing, by the way? Because remember he had some alcohol issues and he threw a cheeseburger at his daughter or something. Am I imagining
that? She videotaped him in sort of a drunken stupor, I guess you could say.
A little warning for the kids who are still celebrating summer break because, you know, school starts August 21st, which how weird is it the first day of school for my kids is the day of the total eclipse?
Mm-hmm.
That is like a cool day to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be one day I'd be looking forward to going to school.
Eclipse day.
But for all you kids on summer break, don't video your parents when they're drunk. Don't do it.
That is a very helpful hint.
Because you know what? You'll come to regret it someday. Maybe if you want to do it and keep it on your cloud, but don't release
it. Can I take the opposing viewpoint? Because that turned his life around. It really did. He realized how awful he became to his child because of that videotape.
She's an adult child.
Well, she is now, but when she took it, she was just a teenager, and she was fed up and said, I don't like seeing my dad this way. So she videotaped him, and he said that that was the first step on the road to recovery, realizing how awful it became.
Well, I guess...
So I say you should always videotape your parents when they're drunk.
Unless my kids are listening, and then don't.
Right. If you're Wendy's children, this does not apply to you, but to everybody else.
I guess he did turn his life around because just a mere 5 hours ago, The Sun, 16 hours ago, TMZ is reporting, David Hasselhoff confirms Knight Rider is returning to TV thanks to Guardians of the Galaxy. I don't know why.
I'm trying to figure out how that would be.
I will tell you.
Why would that be?
I will tell you.
All right.
He was in it.
Oh, David Hasselhoff
yeah.
was in it? Oh, all right.
So he was in that and the SpongeBob movie. So
he was magnificent in the SpongeBob movie.
He was really good in it.
I know people always go, boy, wasn't Orson Welles great as Charles Foster Kane? And I say, yeah, he was all right. But see Hasselhoff in the SpongeBob movie if you want to see an actor.
Guardians of the Galaxy is so powerful it might bring Knight Rider back to TV, according to Kit's partner. Kit's partner? David Hasselhoff.
Oh.
The Hoff, which he did change his name, right?
Legally, I think.
You don't do that.
He's David Hasselhoff, Wendy. You do what you want.
Yeah, but everybody knows him as that. If you
right.
said David Hoff to me, I'd be like, who's
that? No, just
that?
The Hoff. Not oh. David Hoff, just The Hoff. That's it.
What does The Rock have to say about that?
He's not happy about that. You know, yeah, he is not pleased. And neither is the situation.
What about also, The Weeknd?
He's fine with it. He's all right with it.
His Guardians of the Galaxy 2 cameo only happened because director James Gunn was a huge fan of his 80s crime-fighting show with the talking car. Yeah. It's also how David ended up starring in a new music video with other Guardian stars. And now The Hoff and James are working on a Knight Rider reboot.
How about that?
I didn't watch the original, did you?
Can I? No.
The car could act.
The car was a pretty good actor. I know this is like the strangest of trivia things, and it's one of those things that only sticks to my brain. Like nobody, other people will hear this. You will forget it within a second of me telling you this, but for some reason I always thought that this was interesting. The actor who played Tad Martin on All My Children.
Yes.
His name is Michael E. Knight.
Right.
His wife left him for David Hasselhoff, who played Michael Knight on Knight Rider.
All right, that is weird.
Is that crazy?
I think she did that intentionally.
That's really messing
like, there should be a book of Bill Left facts.
Right.
You really should write a book.
Yeah. They're like pretzels.
Yeah. I know a lot of dumb stuff, and for some reason, like stuff like that really fascinates me because it's just so weird.
But that seems like an intentional slam. If you're going to leave your husband, that's one thing.
Yeah.
But, you know.
It shouldn't be that. You shouldn't have that kind of weird commonality.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, what if your wife left you and started seeing the sky acrobat named Bill Leff?
She's threatened to do that. Because then she wouldn't have to change her towels.
She likes loop-de-loops.
Love the name, not the fella so
right.
much.
Right.
I didn't watch Knight Rider.
And then she ever called him by the wrong name, he wouldn't even know it. He would just go, oh, yeah, that's my name. Don't wear it out. It'd be easy.
I think we were all too old for Knight Rider.
Maybe.
Like, it came out at a time when we were already socially active and not on the internet.
I don't think it was a kid's show, though. I mean, I think it was popular
right.
among
Most
adults.
Most of its fan base was adults, I think. Knight Rider.
Yes, yeah.
You Dr. Craig? Was it
yeah.
Dr. Craig?
William Daniels, right? Is that
yeah.
the guy who played the voice of Kit?
I mean, he would go save people in Boston
right.
one week, and then the next week he'd be a car.
Voice of the car. You know who he is, right?
No.
He's also the teacher in Boy Meets World, William Daniels.
Oh, I love Boy Meets World. What did I just say that on the air?
Yeah, that's fine. You don't have to be embarrassed about that.
No, you do. Really, you do.
Oh, whatever.
That's all right. All right, let's do this. We'll take a break. Steve has the news. And then a couple of great guests. Dr. John Duffy joins us at 11:05. And Tony Fulmer, our friend from the Chalet Nursery, joins us at 11:35. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And Dr. John Duffy is here. He's a clinical psychologist, best-selling author of an awesome book called The Available Parent. Also doing a podcast called Undo Anxiety. How are you, Dr. Duff?
I'm great, guys. How are you?
We're good. That was a little static. I don't know what happened. Oh, in the booth. Kevin, you're
Kevin's
fired.
Got a hair dryer going.
Right.
That's fine. Kevin, you do what you need to do.
Either way, I'm great.
Yeah.
How are you guys?
We're good. Kristen McQuarrie was in here earlier this week, and I was talking to her off the air, and I said, my son Dylan, who's 14, said, so what about this North Korea stuff? Should I be worried?
Yeah.
Got to be honest with you, I didn't know how to answer, and I said, I don't think that's something that you should lose sleep over. We are in the Midwest. We're in the center of the United States. So I feel much safer than the coastal states. That's all I could say to him.
Actually, I like that. It's completely reasonable and you're addressing his fear. So, the deal today, unlike a generation ago when we could just turn off the TV and our kids would be unaware of what was going on in the world, right now, there are so many ways for kids to know what's going on that there are not many 14-year-olds who don't have some idea that something's going on with North Korea right now, right? You know, so
because Kristen kind of said, "Wow, you know, that surprises me that these kids are worried about it, but it's in their face."
Oh, it's in their face. It's on their phone. It's on the TV. It's on their computer. They're is no escaping news like this, you know, and to pretend that our kids are oblivious to it, they might be suffering some anxiety unnecessarily. So to address it directly and say, hey, we can talk about this. I don't think this is something you need to worry about acutely right now. But if something comes up, we'll bring it up again, you know.
But, John, it goes back to, I mean, you can use so many instances. I will use September 11th because it's the one I remember most vividly.
Yeah.
Is when my daughters would see it on television you can't really lie to them. You just don't want to provide all the facts, but then you feel bad because it's like, you know, at the time, I think my daughters were 4 or 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember talking it over with other parents going, are you keeping your TV set off? What are you doing so they don't keep seeing the same disturbing footage?
Well, we've talked about, my colleagues and I have talked about, like, you know, if 9/11 had happened now.
Yeah.
It would be such a different thing for parents because, you know, my son was about your daughter's age at the time, and we recognized what was going on and kind of brought him to a different room, you know, and we were able to separate that. But if he had had an iPad in his hand, you know, well, he might have just found that on his own. So we have to communicate a lot more with our kids at much younger ages. In a lot of ways, they're, in terms of information gathering, they're doing it whether we want them to or not, you know? And so we can't ignore that fact. We can't ignore that reality.
All right. So in a case like this with Kim Jong-un, where we as adults know this is a credible threat.
Yes.
So how do we convey that to our kids? Not giving them too much to worry about, not giving them enough to worry about. Like, how do we figure out what the right balance is?
That's a great question, Bill. So you take age and developmental level and what they can handle into account, right?
Yeah.
Because if you have a 17-year-old, you might need to tell them more than you tell an 11-year-old about what's going on, right? You know, but it's almost like the old joke about the need-to-know basis, where, you know, you tell your kid what they need to know in order for them to be able to feel informed, like you're not putting one over on them. They know enough, and they're not terribly scared.
Right.
You know, and you've got to, as parents, we've got to walk that line as carefully as we can.
Yeah, I didn't know how to respond to it because, you know, maybe we do have to worry a little bit, but I think we're good right in the middle of the United States. And also, you know, with the news and the Facebook and social media and just your smartphones and computers, in a weird way, I think it's kind of a good thing that our kids are asking us more because, I mean, my mom never talked to me about sex, about anything. So now I feel like that opens the lines of communication way more with parents and kids.
I think parents miss opportunities in this very way, right? That things come up all the time about world events, about sex is a great example where we have these opportunities to talk to our kids that our parents didn't have. They had to create the opportunities. Now we have all sorts of ways to talk to our kids about sex and drugs and rock and roll and all the stuff that we want them to stay away from, or at least we want to open a discussion about.
Wendy's mom talked to me about sex. Do you think that's weird?
I think it's a little unusual.
It is strange,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. Is it okay to show with your
kids?
You
must have
around
a terrible sex life.
Oh, boy. Is it okay to show with your kids around that you, as a parent, as an adult, are scared about things? Show some vulnerability. Is that all right?
I think that is all right, actually.
And that's different from our parents, too. It was like, oh, get out of here. We're fine.
We're
tough.
We're fine. We're solid. We're good. Nothing to worry about. Nothing to see here. Move on. Son,
lie,
right?
Lie, lie.
Right, right, right. No, I think now is a great time to be more open and vulnerable with your kids. And if we're anxious about something, if we're worried about something, especially with our older kids, as they reach even the tween years, like those middle school years, kids are savvy. They know what's going on. And if we're pretending that we're not upset, they're emotionally astute. They will recognize that we're lying to them, you know, and that causes an enormous breach. Far better to be honest with them and say, yeah, I'm a little worried about this. I'm not terribly worried, but I'm kind of worried about this. I'm kind of sad and upset
about
it.
That's okay. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, no.
So in essence, what you're supposed to do is validate your child's fears first and foremost. And then, like, I understand why you'd be scared. I am too. But I think we're going to be okay.
And the most important part of that, Wendy, you're right, is validation. You know, because if you invalidate or you ignore your child's fears, then they're going to feel either like, oh, well, I'm foolish for feeling the way I do, or my mom just doesn't get me or my dad doesn't get
me. And I'm not going to talk to him about anything
else. So I'm out. Right. Exactly.
And kids are constantly kind of watching their parents as ways of figuring out what direction they're going to head in when they're in a similar situation, aren't they?
We are always modeling for our kids.
Yeah.
So, you know, if we're being honest with them, they're going to be honest with the people around them. You know, if we are couch potatoes, for example, you know, they will be couch potatoes and we can lecture them all day long, but they're far more likely to do what we do than to just follow what we say, for sure.
All right, smartphones. We were talking about that because now nothing is hidden from kids. Everything's out there.
Yes.
And smartphones, can we have a discussion on that?
Yes, yeah.
Should we take a break first?
Let's do a quick break. We'll talk about the potential dangers of smartphones with your kids next. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy along with Dr. John Duffy on WGN.
You used to call me on my cell phone late night when you need me.
We are so hip here on WGN.
Yeah.
All right, it's Bill, it's Wendy, it's Dr. John Duffy, and smartphones could pose a problem for our younger kids, can't they?
Yeah, more so than I thought. Research that came out in the last few weeks suggests that excessive use of a cell phone, and we're talking about more than about 2 hours a day, can drive loneliness and depression and anxiety and a whole bunch of mental health concerns. The good news, or what would appear to be good news, is kids are physically safer because they don't leave home a whole lot. They leave home less than they used to. They drink less. They party less. They go out less, but they socialize less. So they're less connected.
Yeah.
They even drive later because they're okay being up in their rooms on their phones,
right,
kind of isolated. And they're later to date and to have sex, but they're so much less engaged in activities at school or jobs, and they're not sleeping very well. So these phones are having an enormous impact on our kids. And I think the antidote, kind of to really simplify and distill it all down, is to have something that your kid is involved in, engaged in, and committed to, whether it's a sport or a club or a group or a play or music, something that works for your kid that gets them off the phone at least part of the time. I think that inoculates our kids a little bit from what's going on emotionally.
I am going to fess up. I easily spend more than 2 hours a day on a cell phone. Kevin, I would like to bet you do too.
2 hours?
More than 2 hours for the whole day?
I don't know, maybe. Probably.
John?
It's less only because I'm in sessions a lot of the time, but were I not, as soon as I walk out of a session, if I'm being honest, both myself and my client, we're looking at some kind of social media. So we're not modeling very well what we want to see in our kids.
I take the train in every day, and a couple of weeks ago on the train platform, as I got onto the platform at Evanston, from my walk at the beginning of the platform to the end, I passed 43 people, all but two were on their phones, either texting, talking to somebody, playing a game, reading a book, all but two out of 43.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It is. It is. And so even when we're outside, right, and we could be connecting with
right.
nature, the wind, the breeze, you
right.
know, something else, we're looking down.
Right.
You know?
That's the official pose of modern man, is him just looking down at his palm.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
A client of mine just went to Europe with her family, and they took a bike tour in one city, which everyone was against doing. But what she realized is, when you're on a bike, your head's up. You have to pay attention,
yeah, right.
you know. So some of it is kind of trickery, is kind of like finding those things that really engage your kids enough
yeah.
that they're not looking down at the thing so often.
So kids see their parents doing it or adults doing it, and it gets back to what we were talking about earlier about how adults are always modeling for kids. Kids just assume, well, that's what life is now,
because
I need to be on a device.
Yeah, but they do it on their own, too.
They
I don't
do.
Know.
Well, an awful lot of what's happening on their phones isn't happening on ours. So Instagram and Snapchat, right? These two
yeah.
things in the last 5 years have kind of taken over their lives
yeah.
and their self-worth. Because, you know, how many likes I get, or how I look relative to this kid over here, or how many people are at the party where I am versus the party where he is. Kids are comparing themselves all the time, and usually they're making upward comparisons. They're
right.
looking for somebody who's doing better than them somehow
yeah.
on some online metric. And so they find ways to feel terrible about themselves.
Yeah.
And I don't think many of us understand, especially Snapchat, very well, because this is the one where you can send a message to somebody and it disappears instantly,
right.
you know,
no
or
proof.
Virtually. No proof, right. So mom and dad can't really find what I just sent or what I just received.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
although you can take screenshots of it.
Exactly. Right.
So how will this end up? I mean, I know now it's alarming, but at some point, will there be any interaction? Will people ever just talk to each other in real life anymore?
I honestly think there's going to be a backlash to all this, and I think kids are going to get sick of it. I think that generation wants to do good things in the world. I really do. I know for a guy my age, I know a lot of people who are 16, and I think at some point they're going to get tired of just being engaged in this, and they're going to recognize this is burning us out. Let's do something bigger, more, different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Soon, I hope. Will it happen soon? Or
I honestly believe it's going to happen, you know, within the next couple of years.
I believe you.
Yeah.
I really do. And I also, to play devil's advocate here, you said that, you know, use of smartphones more than 2 hours a day can have adverse effects on learning and things like that. However, you also mentioned they're not drinking as much. They're
right.
not having sex as much. They're putting off driving. In a weird way, that's kind of good.
Well, see, as parents, like, we can be drawn in by that, right? Because that does feel good. It feels safe. And it feels like, okay, my kid is underneath this roof and all the things that I'm most afraid of aren't happening. But we have to balance that out with the peril of, okay, but my kid is up in his or her room with the door closed alone. And I don't want this to sound like, you know, those damn kids and their phones, because I really don't mean it to sound
right,
that way.
Sure.
I just want us to be aware of the emotional impact that all the time on the phones, you know, is taking. Let's face it, you know, the phones are amazing. If we had them when we were 15 or 16,
we
would have been on them like crazy too, you know?
We
so we can't really blame kids for this.
I was at, my son Michael performed at a private party a couple of weeks ago, and I ran into somebody I went to high school with, and he jokingly said, so, you know, does your kid want a beer? And I said, my kid's 18, he doesn't drink. And he goes, yeah, right. I know how you were at 18. I said, I'm not kidding you. And he was shocked.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, this is a good thing about kids these days. They are, take the phones out of the picture for just a second, they are more responsible in so many ways
than
we
were.
The case in point I use most often is I ask kids all the time, does anybody ever drive drunk? Mm-hmm. So even if you're drinking, even if you're at a party and you're drinking, and nobody, there isn't a kid around who is a teenager now who would let a friend of theirs drive drunk or get in a car with somebody who
it's
is
progress.
Driving drunk.
And it's huge.
Major
huge.
Progress, right?
Yeah.
Because they're thinking things through and they're really taking care of each other.
Yeah. So this device that was invented to bring people closer and more together in reality kind of does the opposite.
It's pretty divisive. And I think it's really isolating in a lot of ways. And I think we have to find ways, and to your point, Bill, to model balance, right? Because I think it's okay to use it some of the time. They're unbelievably remarkable devices. I mean, my iPhone is a prized possession. I love it.
Yeah.
But it's important to balance that out with the rest of life. Otherwise, and this piece says it pretty clearly, it defines your life. You know,
right.
It really does define your life, your self-esteem, your self-worth, everything that you do.
One of the most telling pictures I've ever seen in my life, somebody sent me a couple of weeks ago, and I got to post it on Facebook. I'll find it. It's a bunch of school kids at a museum in France, an art museum, and there's all these great works of art all around them, and every kid is on their phone just looking on their phone when they've got this incredible array of artwork around them.
Boy, is that a sign of the times, right?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so they're conditioned, right, to
yeah.
be looking down instead of up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That should be a school rule. I know... even up through junior high in our district, you cannot have a phone out during the school day, which includes field trips. So, I mean,
good.
They should keep that.
They should, absolutely. And that should go through high school. There's really no reason to have a phone out during high school. I think by college, you should be responsible for what you do and what you don't. But through high school, I think that ought to be that's a good rule. And then you've got 7 hours a day,
yeah,
at the very least, where your child is engaged in something else.
Yeah. We have only a minute, but I'll ask you this really quick. I know you can't give an extensive answer, but this was the time of year that for a lot of kids, myself included, it starts to hit you. Oh, no, school's just a couple of weeks away. Do you see kids get a little more depressed almost because of the fact that summer's coming to a close?
Definitely. There's a little depression and there's a little excitement and anxiety rises a little bit. I see a little mix of everything. Business is busy this time of year.
Yeah, I bet.
Because parents are a little amped up too. We want to set a tone for the year where it's like, okay, last year might not have gone perfectly, so let's set up a circumstance in which you're studying regularly and you're engaged in something, you know?
Yeah.
So absolutely, things get amped up enormously this time of year, next couple
Although
of weeks.
Although I know you never did, but there were other people, I think most other people were a little excited to get back to school because I just liked getting the new Ticonderoga pencils and the notebook, and then you get to see who's in your class, and it's very exciting for at least the first five minutes.
Well,
and the first day of our district school is the day of the total eclipse, so I think that's a great day to start school.
No kidding, right? And yeah,
Bonnie
and I do
Tyler
see that
High
too.
Is that where you go to school?
Yes. Total eclipse of the school.
Of the school year. So this is a natural thing. Don't be shocked when your kids feel a little.
No, there's going to be some degree of anxiety.
Yeah.
And to your point, some degree of excitement too. You know,
sure.
I think kids look forward to it. That usually doesn't linger very long,
yeah.
but that's a good thing to bank on too. I think, summer gets old after a while, you know, the lack of structure,
yeah.
you know, as much as
structure.
Kids don't want to admit
it. I hate that word.
I know.
Wendy wouldn't even shop in structure in the mall.
No kidding.
She just didn't like it.
I hate that word.
That's Dr. John Duffy. John, thanks so much.
Thanks,
really
guys.
Appreciate it. We'll take a quick break and then some news, and then Tony Fulmer stops by. So stick around for that. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
But I guess that's why they say every rose has its thorn.
I like what you did there, Kevin. Every rose has its thorn, and someone who is not a thorn in my side is Tony Fulmer. Always a pleasure to have him here from the Chalet Nursery. How are you, sir?
Great. Always happy to be here.
You were upgraded. You know this already, Tony, but when you walked in, Wendy said, "Hello, cutie." You've reached a status that very few of our guests achieve, the cutie status.
And as I said, at my age, I will take just about anything that's halfway complimentary.
Good.
All right, garden time. I have to admit, I've neglected my garden this year. This is the first year in probably about 15 I haven't planted tomatoes.
Mm.
I got too lazy. I just didn't
do
it.
Are you disappointed, Tony? You
well,
should be.
Well, no. Judging from the number of tomato problems we're having, this might, if you're not a person that uses fungicides.
I don't.
Okay, then this is maybe a good year to sit tomatoes out.
You're kidding me. Oh. I thought we had such an amazing summer for tomatoes.
Well, they're growing and growing and growing, but if I had a dollar for every person that's brought a tomato sample in with early blight on it, I'd be summering in south of France right now.
What's gone wrong, Tony? Why?
Rain.
Is that what it is?
Am I the only one who doesn't think we got that much rain this year?
There was a lot of rain this year.
But a lot of sunny, beautiful days, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I keep track. I have my own little weather bug station. And in my rain gauge in Deerfield, I had over 10 inches of rain just in July.
Wow.
That's a lot of rain.
That's a lot of rain. And,
yeah.
and so that's one of the things that people need to be looking for right now.
How will this affect the ketchup industry, Tony?
You may have spotted ketchup.
Is that true?
I'm surprised they have flavored ketchup of every different flavor. I'm surprised spotted ketchup is one of them.
I would buy spotted ketchup if they made such a thing. All right.
So there's every season and every time of the year is a certain time to do something in your garden. It is a year-round thing,
right.
isn't it?
Right.
So what
Absolutely.
Should we be doing now?
Well, this is the time of year that people should start thinking about the cool season crops. So if you're an edible person and you do a lot of veggies, this is the time to start thinking about, all right, the cool season crops, because we're 3 weeks away from, you know, September cooler temperatures, although this has been a really inordinately wonderful year with all the rainfall and cooler temperatures, cooler than average.
Yeah.
But you need to be starting to think about, you can do spinach, lettuce.
You can plant it now?
Yeah, because it'll be germinating and growing in the cooler temperatures of September and October.
All right.
So don't forget any spinach, lettuce, radishes, chard, beets, and kale can go in right now. And then the shorter term crops that will also take cool season, you can do radishes. You can have radishes in 28 days from seed.
I love radishes.
Hmm. And you know what I read years ago? They're good for your hair.
Radishes are?
I read that.
How come? What's in a radish that would be good for your hair?
It's kind of skimmed over that. It is a mystery. It's an unknown scientific fact.
Huh.
But it just said radishes are good for your hair.
I didn't know that.
Well, they said carrots were good for your eyes, too.
Yeah.
Just because of the beta carotene in it.
Right.
I don't believe them.
Right.
Someone I ran into, and I've had the same problem, too, speaking of your crops and veggies, what happens with cilantro that you get one little serving of cilantro, and then it goes to seed, and that's it? It doesn't last the whole summer. What do you have to do to keep cilantro going longer?
See, that's one of those edible things, and I try and stay out of the kitchen. I'd rather be in the garden than the kitchen. So when it comes to those kinds of questions, my guess would be that if you see it starting to produce flowers, I would head that back and I would cut those off.
Kevin, did you have a cilantro question too? Because it looked like you sat
I thought you were going to talk about, I recently got a batch of cilantro and I rinsed the heck out of it and it was still covered in sand or something. It was disgusting.
You have to rinse it, and sometimes you get a bunch that you get at the grocery store, and I don't know if it grows in sandy soil. I guess it does.
Right.
Because there's sandy soil all over it, and despite how many times you wash it, and even if you put it in a colander, every once in a while, there will be that
stuck in
grit.
Your molars, yes.
Kevin, what happened
to you? Ruined my tacos. I made beautiful carne asada tacos. Ruined.
But they have this stuff, this food wash, don't they, like in produce departments that you can spray on your food to clean it off, don't they?
That's to get pesticide off of it, but yeah. With some of the stuff you really have to rinse.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Could you have it dry clean, Kevin? Maybe bring it to the dry cleaner.
Yeah, I'll try that next time.
All right.
I have another question for you. Coneflowers. I am a big fan of the white swan. They're just usually you see a coneflower. It looks like a daisy. It's purple with the center part is like a brownish black. Mm-hmm. I like those, but the white ones were really cool, and I like them. Mm-hmm. And they keep coming back. They're perennials. I've had them maybe about 5 years. All of a sudden, they're purple. What happened? What happened to the white?
From
they were the white.
It's exactly the same plant. You're not getting a lot of seedlings coming up.
No. All of a sudden, you know, I look, oh, there's my white swan. And now all of a sudden, after about 5 or 6 years,
they
have come back
to
the original color. Is it they're a hybrid and then all of a sudden it burns itself out?
Well, there is such a thing as reversion. And we get this about once a year. I have someone that will say a peony that's been 150 years old and it's been white and it was in their grandmother's garden. And now this year it's pink. So I always question something like a peony, something like a the white swan echinacea comes back. That can seed about. And so that's why I'm wondering.
Oh, maybe.
Don't get your peonies in a bunch, Wendy.
Silence.
Not even the crickets were talking. It's funny, though, Tony, because you are a smart broadcaster. You like to fill that silence.
Well, Tony,
I would have left it for 20 minutes.
Tony went and had a sandwich. I watched Tony go across the street and have a sub sandwich.
No, but that's why I was asking. If it's exactly the same plant, that's one thing.
I think it is.
But if you have multiple plants and if you didn't get to your weeding, a lot of times if a hybrid is not sterile, and it seeds, it'll be like children from the same parents. You'll have a lot of variability.
Have your children change colors one
day?
No.
You'll have variability. And so I would check carefully and say, all right, is that really exactly the same plant, or is that a seedling that's coming up around
some
the
base of them are coming back like it's...
How many plants did you have in that area?
Three. I usually plant by threes.
And how many
and
do you have now?
I have two sections. I have the purple coneflowers in one area, and then I had the white swans in the other.
Okay.
And it's like last summer I noticed they were kind of a pinkish hue on the white, and this year they're almost completely purple again. So they are somehow changing.
Yeah,
I'm a magician in the
garden, evidently.
This is the closest I've ever seen you to being baffled. And all the times you've been on the show, I've never seen you thrown.
It happens all the time.
Does it really?
Oh, absolutely.
I've never seen it.
Absolutely.
That was refreshing to watch.
Absolutely.
My mom and dad have a rose bush that changes color every year. How does this happen? Something's happening
with
this world.
These are like mood rings, Tony.
There is a thing called reversion, and when things are highly, highly, highly hybridized, a lot of times nature
reverts back.
It's unstable. The genetic mutation is unstable, and it will revert back to what one of the parents was.
How about that?
It doesn't seem right.
Nope.
Somebody wants to know if you can plant potatoes now.
No, you missed that. That's a spring crop. That is a spring crop.
What happens if you do? They just won't come out right?
You just won't have, you don't have enough time.
Yeah.
And with the temperatures, soil temperatures dropping,
right.
You just won't have time for development of any kind of size of potato.
Somebody wants to talk lawn fungus. What is lawn fungus?
Lawn fungus can be any of a number of different kinds of things. And with the fungal diseases, and even for lawns, there, if you made a grid of hot and wet and hot and dry and cool and wet and cool and dry, there would be a different set of fungal diseases that
would...
Could you
record that for me? Actually, I would put that as my ringtone. I thought that was beautiful. Whatever you wrote, I love that.
I'm
sorry for his behavior, Tony.
So there's a different set of fungal organisms that will grow in any single one of those four different kinds of conditions.
You don't think lawn is going to get a problem, though.
No.
But we have a tendency, because if we have irrigation systems, we have a tendency, and we tend to fertilize in the summer now, when most of these desirable turf grasses would ordinarily be dormant. And so that stresses them when we keep pushing them and fertilizing them and watering them when they would ordinarily go dormant if they were left to their own devices when it gets warmer and drier.
Got it.
So that stresses them and makes them more susceptible.
So what do you do for it? Fertilizer?
Well, it depends. That's why you really need to get a good diagnosis. You need to bring a sample in to your independent garden center and have them take a look at it. It's a little bit like phoning in your symptoms to the doctor and saying, okay, I have a fungus and it's, you know, what do I do for it? Not safe.
A Z-Pack. That's all your doctor will
do. Yeah, get a Z-Pack.
And,
too sweet.
And there is, if anybody thinks they have fungal diseases, they might want to look at my blog, my most latest blog post on hortaholic.com.
I love it.
And it's about chinch bugs, and chinch bugs will give you the kinds of symptoms that you might think you have a fungus disease when in fact you have a insect problem.
Oh, all right. Tony Fulmer is here from the Chalet Nursery in Wilmette, right across from the Panda Express. Make a day of it, I do. We'll take a quick break.
Get a mock orange tree and some orange chicken.
It's delicious together. 312. You guys have a special going with them, don't you?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Buy one, get one half off. 312-981-7200 if you have any questions.
You're cracking yourself up.
Yeah, I don't know how I do it. It's WGN. Wendy, our friend Tony Fulmer is here from the Chalet Nursery in Wilmette. If you have any questions or comments, Tony, you get, of all the guests we have, you get the most questions. More people call us, more people text us. I don't know what's
really?
Going on, but yeah, you have stirred people's curiosity.
It's the subject matter. It's not,
that's what
it's
it,
not
well?
Me. It's not me.
It's
maybe
both.
It is both.
Do you want to ask Kevin why he played that song?
Yeah, Kevin,
that
what was the meaning of that Led Zeppelin song?
Led Zeppelin's frontman is Robert Plant.
No, still don't get it.
That was a little tenuous.
I do not get it.
I loved it,
and the
Kevin.
San Francisco Giants catcher is Buster Posey.
Whoa.
All right.
Okay. All right. Very good. Yep. Cindy has a question for Tony Fulmer, chief horticulturist at Chalet Nursery in Wilmette. You can go to his blog at hortaholic.com. God, I love that. Cindy, you have a question?
Yes, Tony. I have a bunch of hostas in the front of my house across the front, which are blooming with the white flowers. But I always get spiders in the leaves. I mean, the whole thing starts getting spidery.
Okay.
Is there any way I control those spiders?
Well, you probably don't really want to, because that they're not harmful at all.
They're not damaging the leaves.
No, absolutely not. They are not damaging anything. So if I was doing it, I guess I'd be tempted to either just try and hose them off with a forceful stream of water, or maybe take a rake and lightly go over the top and break up the webs, but they'll be right back. But they are not harmful. In fact, they're overwhelmingly beneficial.
Oh, okay.
So,
all right. I thought that they were harming it. And...
No. The only thing that really bothers hosta, rabbits and deer, would be slugs.
Oh,
And that gives you a totally different symptom.
Thank you so much for your help. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right, speaking of slugs, can I just tell you these are the ugliest things I have ever seen? And sometimes, like, a garbage lid will be on the ground or something, and then I'll go to look, and there's this big, hideous, gross, slimy thing. Because I see one or two, does that mean they're all over my yard?
They generally don't just have one, yes. Yes.
They're so gross.
Yes.
And what will they do? Will they take us over?
Well, no. It's not science fiction.
Eventually,
but
Tony, they will, though.
Okay.
You know that.
It looks like just a
giant... I defer to you
on slug questions. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Oh, they're so gross.
They are all over, and they will always be in the cool, shady, damp spots in your garden.
They thrive there.
They thrive there. And hosta is probably their number one host plant. So that's
do they eat it? Do they destroy it?
Oh, yes. Destroy, but they make it very unsightly because they're one of the few things that they're not technically an insect. They're a mollusk, and so they can get in and they can just shred the leaves.
Imagine getting a snail and pulling it out of its shell and making it a little bigger.
That's what it's like. A slug is like that.
So what do you use to de-slug your
there
life?
There is actually a very good, very safe product called Sluggo.
Sluggo. Nancy's friend.
Exactly.
Balding friend, little six-year-old with a bald spot.
Looks like a slug.
Yeah.
They're bald, too.
That is iron phosphate.
Yeah.
So it is very safe, and it's on a wheat-based carrier, and you just sprinkle a little bit of that around under your hostas.
A little dab of Sluggo will do you, Wendy.
And once they ingest that, they stop eating and they crawl away to that great snail cemetery in the sky and they just die. So you won't find a big pile of them dead somewhere, but they will just, they stop eating. It interrupts their digestive process. So they stop feeding and they just crawl away. And
slug killer. Die.
I don't care, man. Those things, oh, you pick Wendy. Up like a lawn ornament and
it's
underneath there's like a slug party going on.
Slug fest.
That's what's happening.
Oh, no.
All right, so you're looking...
Makes Lollapalooza look like nothing.
Everybody's lawns are looking pretty decent unless you have fungus because
yes.
we've been getting a lot of rain.
Yes.
And
yes.
everybody thinks, you know, okay, it's winter's coming. We can let our lawn take a break. And then springtime comes and we all want to fertilize and get our lawn in great shape. We're doing it backwards, aren't we?
That is very insightful. You are horticulturally correct. What people
Thank
need
you.
To know is...
I put the whore in horticulture. Wait,
Tony,
I don't think
if you want
to
if you
want to
leave, go okay. ahead. I'll go with you. We can both go right now. We'll go to Panda Express.
It's a long trip.
I don't care.
The longer the ride, the better, huh?
Yeah.
August 15th to September 15th is the very best time to do any kind of lawn renovation or repair, whether you're seeding or sodding. And everybody thinks it's spring. But in spring, when you're going into higher temperatures, that's what the weed seeds like. So you have a lot more competition from weed seeds in areas where you're seeding in spring. In the fall, our desirable turf grasses like Kentucky Blue and the fescues for shade like cooler temperatures, and you don't have all the weed competition. So this is the very best time if you have a thin patch or if your lawn overwhelmingly is thin all the way through, this is the time to think about doing any kind of repair and renovation and reseeding.
And obviously you have to water it, but you don't. It seems like you don't have to water it as much in the fall because it's cooler and damper.
Exactly, and we call it syringing. So you just want to keep the soil surface damp. If you're watering heavily enough that you can see the seed floating on top of the soil, you're watering too much.
All right, we have 2 seconds. Jerry, ask your question to Tony Fulmer.
Real quick, Tony. I've got two neighbors with Creeping Charlie all around them, and I want to keep it out of my yard. How do I do that?
Anything that crawls over in your yard, you wait until we've had the first frost. And research indicates that that is the very, very best time to go after Creeping Charlie. So you wait until you have the first frost, and then you get a specialized kind of a heavier duty broadleaf weed control, and you also use a spreader sticker. You add that to the spray, the concentrate, and that will break down the surface tension of the water molecule, and it will stick better. It has a tendency to roll off Creeping Charlie, so you want it to stick. So you make sure that you get a spreader sticker.
Okay, spreader sticker. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Tony, Creeping Charlie was the name of one of my janitors in high school.
I think it's Sluggo's cousin.
It's a weed. My side lawn is almost all Creeping Charlie, and
yeah,
I just at some
tough.
Point don't care anymore. It's green, so it blends in.
Well, from a distance.
Yeah, I guess.
From a distance. Yeah.
You're cracking yourself up today more than I've ever seen.
I'm a genius.
That's not a good janitor to
have.
No,
that's a terrible janitor to have. Tony, thank you so much for coming by and putting up with Wendy's nonsense. I don't know why you do it.
As always, it's my pleasure.
I have no idea why.
I'm at my worst when you're around, Bill. Thank you for that.
Go
Sorry,
visit
Tony.
Tony at the Chalet Nursery in Wilmette. It's a great place to go if you love things horticulturally and you want to visit their website, which is chaletnursery.com. We'll take a quick break and then find out what Steve has next. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.